Hey everybody, the con artist here. We're all gonna get together to talk about Ancient Magus Bride. So I know Dan, Scott, Brendan, you guys actually got together and talked about, I want to say, the first six episodes maybe in the mid-year cast.
Sounds about
the
right.
Reason I wanted to, yeah, so I wanted to break this show out into its own cast just because it was one of the most anticipated shows of 2017. There was a lot of buzz about it. It was a really big deal. And now having watched 12 episodes of the show, I wanted to discuss what we thought about it. Is it worth the hype thus far? And just anything else you guys had to say about it and how it's doing. So I really liked this second half much more than the first half. I think I'll just start with that. I felt like the first half, it did what it needed to do. It taught us that this world is just full of like Celtic and English mythology and just organically threw it in there. So I liked its soft approach to just throwing things in there episode by episode. Like in this episode, Oberon and Titania show up. And in this episode, there's an entire kingdom of cats that just exist and it's a thing. And I was like, sure, why not? And I enjoyed that, but I really felt like this half had a lot more to offer in terms of character growth. And I think I've mentioned about 1,000 times at this point that that's really my forte and what I'm looking for in a show. So I'll let you guys kind of start off, I guess, with what you really liked, maybe as overall, or what you really like about this half, or however you guys want to start that.
Sure.
I like the last quarter.
Last quarter. I mean, the art continues to be just top notch all the time. Like,
holy cow, the production values on this show are so high.
Pretty much every way. Yeah.
And quality, just episode after episode is incredible. My favorite spots so far in the show are anytime they go to Iceland, it's just beautiful, which is like where the dragons live.
That's the best part.
It's incredible. And it's not even because the dragons are there. Just it looks so pretty. The backgrounds are so pretty. And the forest near Elias's house, which I think we talked about in the first cast, like where he meets the Tirnanog, is also just gorgeous.
I was actually in agreement with you, Scott, when you talked about in the mid-year that sequence with Titania when she appears, just the music plus the production plus the camera angles. Like, the whole thing was perfect, but that was actually beat out by one of the latest episodes in 6 through 12 where the Dragon Master, Leandel or whatever, he sings. And he sings to these flowers that, like, open up in a field, and I was, like, it was like mind blown. Like, I was like, you only see this kind of stuff out of like the OVA version of this. Like, it's so gorgeous and so stunning. And that whole sequence was awesome.
Yeah, I have to imagine that if you are any other company right now, like looking over at this show, you're like, how are they doing this?
Yeah, you have to be. Envy over the fence.
I think that What I enjoyed the most about that was the fact that they were able to make magic seem magical. Same thing happened with Little Witch Academia. Just, you know, very when they wanted to just let magic be its own thing, you know, just beautiful music, flowing animation, everything was just very, very focused on it, and they gave it room to breathe. They never just like did one quick scene. They usually let the camera, you know, hold on it for a little while. That sequence that you were talking about with Lindell singing, I don't know if it ends exactly, but it culminates in the Dance of the Elves. And
that's right. Yeah. They all come out because they're attracted to his song and the flowers opening, and they make Chise dance with them. It's just so pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Just they give you that. This is what I kind of came here for in a lot of ways. I wanted to see what their take on magic was, and so in that regard, I've been very satisfied. And like you said, overwhelmingly good production values throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, like it's nice to see magic that isn't just fireballs and pentagrams all the time, like in, you know, most other shows. This is a lot more subtle and a lot more interesting and a lot more beautiful than most of the other stuff.
And it also gets to be kind of esoteric, even outside of the production values. You have things like tying, what was it, spruce branches or something together to...
Oh, yeah, with the red string.
Yeah, it's like an appeasement to the forest spirits in order to, you know, let them lead you to wherever you want to go, because mages work by basically making deals or temporarily asking the Fae for help, versus sorcerers who just kind of exert their will on the universe, as far as I can tell. And
yeah, that was a really neat distinction.
Yeah. And I just appreciate that, you know, the rules were definitely esoteric and kind of bizarre, but they always made sense. It's like, oh, this is what they're doing. They're, you know, Chisei is like making a potion by like, you know, gathering materials and like using, you know, elements and magic from different fey in order to make this work. So it was cool stuff like that that I really appreciated. They made, again, magic seems magical. It's not just, you know, this is another word for like science we can't understand or anything like that.
Yeah, like it actually brings to mind, like, back in the first half of the season, the episode where they go to the cat town, and Elias is like, Chisei, you need to go help purify this massive enmity or whatever. And rather than her just, you know, pulling out some slips of paper and going Miko on it, she's like, no, you're going to need like this outfit and also this gorse branch and like all this other stuff. It's like, yeah, this really feels like they did some research here into sort of a more Western tradition.
Or at least were able to fake it well enough that it looks
plausible.
They
certainly faked it well enough. Like, they did a very good job. So I appreciate that.
There's definitely a lot of trying. So I want to toss out kind of a big theme, but before that, Brendan, you've been kind of quiet. Like, are you enjoying the magic of the show? And
absolutely,
I guess.
Like, I basically am in agreement with everything that you guys have said so far.
Okay, sounds good. So I'll just toss out this big motif. So in all of these episodes, I'm personally under the belief that the show would work so much better if there wasn't that pervading sort of creepy romance angle that they tossed in really, really early. So, I mean, it's pretty easy to tell that this is like a modern day take on, or a different take on Beauty and the Beast for the most part. But I don't totally buy everything that's going on. I think episode one soured me a bit with the whole like Elias buying her and then calling her a puppy once or twice. And that really left me in a bad way. And I will say, I like that the show is veering a little more out of that and kind of into like familial love as opposed to romantic or sexual love, because to me, there's so many different types of love that you can explore. And with Elias not being human and not really understanding the idea of marriage or a wife or love in that sense, I like that, you know, out of him, he's beginning to be like, I don't really understand what's going on, but I'm lonely and it's cold when you're not here, Chisei. And Chisei being like, I want to know more about you, you know, instead of you just being that guy who bought me and is nice to me, I kind of want to know more about you. I don't like when you shut yourself away and tell me about yourself and what's bothering you. I really like that they're taking it in that direction. I don't know that the show is going to stick with that. I really wish it would, but I don't know that the show is going to stick with that. I will say, though, I really enjoy the direction these two characters are taking, where Elias doesn't quite know what's going on and is beginning to feel emotions that we would define as human, and Chisei is beginning to really come out of her shell. And it's taken a long time to get there. I appreciate that the show really takes trauma seriously for Chisei. Like, I think these are the types of things that, you know, like Clannad would solve in an episode or two. And this show is like, no, trauma's the real deal. Like, she is traumatized and has been through a lot, and it's taken this long for her to start coming out of that. So I guess, what do you guys think about that and that kind of stuff? Because that's a big pervading part of the show now.
Yeah, I really think that they've improved over the most of the first half of this show. And I do appreciate the direction that they seem to be going in as far as that. Because you're right, it was like when they brought it out, like at the end of the first episode, you do get that sort of that creep factor. I mean, like, what exactly is the plan here? And they've done a good job of like backing off of that shock value and you know, doing their thing that seems to be working.
Yeah, I like that angle a lot better.
Yeah, I agree that it's definitely better than where it started. My issue is mostly that while I understand why the characters are this way, and, you know, recent revelations have definitely helped in that regard, it really kind of ground on me for a long time because neither Elias nor Chisei are proactive characters whatsoever. Like, Elias only goes out and does these things because he's told to by the church 9 times out of 10. And Chisei just tags along with him. And it just was... You have two, I don't want to exactly call them stoic characters, but very quiet characters that are very introverted. And it's really hard to get those two types of character, or that same type of character, to play off one another, because they're both very quiet. They don't voice their actual thoughts very often. And because of that, we're left more or less listening to Chisei's internal monologue half of the time. And I found it really hard to care about what happened to either of them for a good portion of the show. And while I do definitely think it's improved, I think that's something that the show's kind of saddled with now, because, you know, it took Chisei this long to not get over her trauma, but to, you know, sort of assert herself a little bit. And Elias is finally starting to, you know, show at least a hint of what can be considered a real personality. So, I don't know. I don't want to say that this, you know, tanks the show for me, but it really, I'm not in it for the characters. I'm in it for the world at this point.
Interesting. See, actually, over time, I've really started to like the characters more. Like, as you learn more about both of them, it's been increasing my interest in them rather than decreasing it, which is pretty good. It's also kind of like Sue said, it's dealing with it in a way that's, I would say more mature than any other show I could name for miles around in the anime landscape. Which is pretty good. And also, like, characters are allowed to be deeply flawed, which these characters are, and they're trying something different, which I really appreciate. Like, none of these characters, with a few side character exceptions, is a trope or a cliche, which is rare enough on its own. So,
all fair points, and like I said, because I don't personally find them that fun to watch, that doesn't mean that they aren't, you know, well realized. I just find that kind of dynamic to be a little bit stale, or not stale, dull to me. But again, everything around them is interesting enough that I'm, you know, happy to keep watching.
Oh man, speaking of around them, those side characters are pretty good. Like, I love that priest guy. Are.
Can we just talk about Ruth? Ruth is like my new fave.
Ruth is really good. Like, he could have been at least 8 different cliches, and he isn't any of them.
Well, it's undeniable that Angela is best character.
Angelica?
Angelica, sorry. Angelica is best character. There is no question. However, Ruth is pretty great.
Mm-hmm. I like Ruth. I like him quite a bit. I like the priest guy, and I like she's the magic shop lady, right?
Yes.
Yeah, all three of them are great side characters.
Oh, yeah. And that's actually what I'm looking forward to in the future. Now that we've sort of gone through the beginning of, you know, Chisei's story a little bit, I would love for us to get some time to spend on these side characters, because both of those people have really fascinating stories that I'm sure I would love to explore some more. Don't know if they're ever going to do it, but if they did, I would be totally down for that.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think just hopping back really quick, I'm not totally buying, I guess, Elias's piece yet, but I think if Dan gets to be personally uninterested in these characters because he finds them dull, I have a hard time with Elias just because of the whole... I have a really rough time with a character who does things and then blames it on ignorance. It totally makes sense for his character, but it's like... You're keeping Chisei in this house, and you think you want to marry her and make her your wife, but you don't really understand human emotions or humanity at all, and this one time you ate a person, and it's like, what am I supposed to think of you exactly? You're very hard to relate to for me, whereas Chisei I find fascinating. I think it's a really neat character study, and I'll just steal Scott's thing. Like, she's a very deeply flawed character, and I find that really fascinating that you're trying to pair two deeply flawed characters, you know, against or with each other.
My concern is that for a character that is, as you said, has been, you know, very traumatized, has had a, you know, terrible childhood, she's really quick to trust Elias. And it's like, this isn't healthy.
And no one in the show is saying it's
healthy. And
you're
absolutely correct.
Which is good.
It's not healthy.
And fortunately, yeah, that's what kind of saves it for me, is because everyone else, it's not, there's no one who's saying, like, and it's like, oh, how romantic. It's like, no, guys, like, this is concerning.
Right, actually, I do appreciate that everyone, like, the church is like, and like, whoever sent that bird over was like, you know, you should probably let her do stuff on her own,
I think that's Lindell.
Is it Lindell? Okay.
No, actually, the guy who sent the bird was Renfred, the sorcerer.
Priest. Oh, really? The sorcerer, Renfred. Okay, I remember him now. Yeah, all right. So,
oh yeah, you're right.
We didn't
get
to hear that entire conversation.
That's true. I'm pretty sure he butted into the line at some point somehow, but
there was two dudes on the other end.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, no one is like this. You know, having the two of them live by themselves together is a great plan. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good.
Ruth at least provides, you know, someone for Chise to talk to more often now, which I appreciate, even if he got over his entire character arc in the span of exactly two episodes.
Yeah, he was an odd duckling.
Yeah, I know if they had time to really focus all the way on him with, like, Chise going on, that's true.
Yeah, they had places to be, I suppose.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I don't know if there's too much more to talk about in the pro side of the category. So, like, one of the cons that I have to raise is sometimes it's kind of hard to tell where we are and where we're going, like, time-wise. Like, there's a lot of time skips in this show. There's been like, oh, it's been 3 months since I came to Elias's house. I'm like, wait, what? Like, they jump around.
It doesn't help that she sleeps for 2 weeks at a time every time she uses magic.
Right. So it's like, it's hard for me to tell how long things have, like, have they been in the same house now for a year? Who knows?
Allow me to once again raise the point of the humble timestamp. I would love it to be like, you know, spring of the next year or something. It would be so much more convenient to be like, oh, okay, so they've been together for like 2 months now. That helps.
But I guess I'd ask, why does that matter? Like, what would you do with the knowledge that they've been together for X amount of time?
It would help explain them being either more or less familiar with each other, or, like, you know, how far Chise should have progressed by that point. It was, you know, you kind of were able to figure it out, but there were moments where it was like, wait, all of a sudden she's doing, all of a sudden she's, like, you know, mixing these potions? When did she learn how to do that? We've been, like, on adventures in the Cat Kingdom for the last three episodes. How's that happening?
Yeah, and it's good that she'd occasionally be like, oh, I have been here, and Elias is teaching me stuff. And it's like, well, good, because for a long time there, it seemed like it was going to be nonstop adventure time, which is fun, but we do need to pause every now and again.
That's interesting, because my primary concern is as far as blocking goes is on the micro. Like, there was sometimes it's hard to tell, like, who is part of what conversation. Hmm. Like, the most egregious example was when they meet this some sort of sylph, and she says, talk about me and I'll eat you. And literally the very first thing that comes out of anybody's mouth in front of somebody who can't see her, which is why she said that, is it's some kind of sylph. And I'm like, he's right there. He's right there. I just said, don't do that.
That exact
thing.
Where is
this conversation happening? Can he not hear you? Like, what is going on? And that happens occasionally, usually not that bad, and it's just a little peeve.
I agree that there were some odd scene jumps now and then that just kind of, like, sort of action-reaction got a little bit confused. But those are minor things, you know, just when you're focusing on the big picture. The time skips aren't a terrible thing, but they do sort of, you know, make you kind of shake your head for a second and go, wait, where were we? Oh, okay.
Right. Also, and maybe this is just part of, like, what, like you said, Dan, you're really in it for. I want to know more about how magic works. Like, Elias plays things really close to the vest.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like Chise is constantly in the dark about everything, which is, I guess, fine, because we are too. But if it's been several months now, and, like, you're like, oh, let's go to this church, and, like, you might get killed by eight different spirits you have no idea about. Like, Elias, are you doing your job? Do your job.
Yeah, it is a little weird that he never opens up about a lot of that stuff. Like, he'll almost purposely put her in danger, or what's perceived as purposely put her in danger, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, why wouldn't you tell her what's going on, or at least, I mean, maybe because he has no human emotions, he doesn't quite perceive what the heck is going on. You would think that, but then as soon as she's in danger, he flips the heck out.
Yeah.
So,
It is weird, and it's like you made a huge investment in this girl, and you're just going to let her wander around in dangerous areas all the time?
Like, it was, like, very prevalent in the first quarter of the show, and it's continuing into the second.
Right. That was definitely a big point for me, and I was, as they explained more about him, it was like, oh, it's because he's, you know, kind of sociopathic, and he doesn't necessarily grasp it, but that doesn't totally explain everything. As you said, he's either always omnipresent, he's always lurking in her shadow, But the moment it counts, he's caught completely off guard. Like, when, what was his name? Cardophilius, shows up and, like, has his big mantis woman thing stab Chise right in the, chest.
Well, to be fair, she jumped in front of its original target.
I suppose so, but it's like, Elias, you are a being of magic with hundreds of years under your belt. Like, you knew this guy was, you know, was mucking around. But now you're surprised? And again, he flips out completely. I suppose, again, because he's always thought he had things under control, because he was always, like, lurking right behind her, so to speak. The one time where he's, like, separate from her and not able to do anything would cause him to, you know, go a bit berserk. But it just seemed weird that they spent all of this time establishing, like, he's always with her, he's always ready, he's, like, you know, he's always going to make certain that she comes out all right, whether her mental well-being makes it on the other side or not. Just seems kind of weird that he would suddenly have missed an opportunity to save her, even if it was, you know, under somewhat strange circumstances.
It is odd. I'll give it that.
Also, shouldn't she have been dead from that?
It is weird that she recovered very, like, no one in this show seems to have any kind of, like, healing magic or anything to, like, she got hit really hard.
Lyndall
does, no idea.
But he was nowhere around.
Yeah, right. Lyndall has That's some healing magic. Well, I think it's like sleigh beggy magic thing. Like, you gotta just wave
and,
your
and
hand.
You can explain
that.
A lot with that, but
I suppose so. But it would have been nice to see something, like, I don't know, see the magic happening. Like, she's glowing a little bit, and it's like, oh, okay, this is magic happening. Not just it's like, didn't you get stabbed? Yeah, but I'm okay now. That's pretty much exactly how it went down.
Yeah, like, it almost looked like Ruth did something, but it
was
never.
About to
they
ask,
never went back to it.
Yeah.
Like, did Ruth kind of fix it by, you know, becoming her familiar? So I was like, maybe.
Yeah, it was an odd scene overall. Actually, speaking of which, dislikes, now that you're saying Cardophilus, that's the silver hair person?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's that creeper sorcerer.
I do not like that character. Like, not in a...
Nor do I.
This villain as a villain. There's a, like, the cheerful but morally heinous villain is just kind of a tired cliche that I don't like. And maybe it's been all the mud whales this season. But, like, I can't stand that villain type.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like you said earlier, there are so few, like, tropey characters in the rest of the show, having this one blatant one all of a sudden show up, it's like, come on, guy.
Yeah, like, I'm sure you guys can come up with an interesting person to work against Elias. This isn't it.
Yeah, you almost needed more of a, like, Moriarty type,
right,
like Sherlock or something like that.
Something like that.
Whereas you get that, like, cliched anime villain who's cackling wildly and makes mantis women or whatever the heck.
Now, Brendan, you and I had actually had a little bit of a conversation about this dude, and what was your take on him?
Well, I mean, he's the Wandering Jew, first of all.
Right.
Which, why? And how?
For those of you unfamiliar with this, there's this semi-apocryphal piece of Christian history where
doctrine, more like,
yeah, where a Jew mocked Jesus on the way to the cross and was basically cursed with eternal life, if I'm getting that right. And
that's the rough yeah.
And he shows up, like, in European folklore now and then, and apparently that is what this character is supposed to be.
That's what Elias thinks he is, which,
well, he also calls himself Joseph, which is one of the names that is commonly attributed to him.
Right, that's a very, you know, Jewish name. It doesn't really work for me, especially, like, as a Christian. I have an issue with the syncretic, like, thing, which is, it's very Japanese in that they try to, like, roll, you know, whatever supernatural or religious stuff that they find, like, together into a single worldview, and that's very much not how Christianity works. It doesn't really work in conjunction with a lot of, you know, other stuff. And I have weird feelings about that, because I know, especially in, like, Irish culture, it's like when the missionaries went there, they tried to bind them together in a way that would, you know, would cause conversion. And I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that. It's very strange.
That is true. Like, I don't know.
Now, feel about that meaning, like, are you mildly offended? Do you think it's just poorly blended? Like, what? Like,
yeah, the whole concept, I think, isn't a very good one. Like, I don't feel like you can blend Christianity into this sort of thing. And that's, you know, sort of because I take it very seriously myself. And also just because, like, that's the way that the religion is structured. Like, oh, yeah, you're talking to Titania and Oberon, but apparently, like, there's the real Christian God. Like, where did the wandering Jew come from if, like, Jesus Christ didn't curse him to eternal life and, like, literally himself? Like, that's what Elias said.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So do you basically call in, like, the entire pantheon of angels and the triumvirate to be characters in the show by, like, implicitly? That is very odd now that you bring it up.
Yeah. And I mean...
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Again, if we're going with the whole kind of old European sort of grab bag of Christian and pagan traditions, that does make sense. But it's the casualness with which they do it, because it's like, could we bring this up to...
The priest.
The, like, priest. It's like, hey, buddy. So everything you believe, like, it's not just your faith anymore. This is logical proven fact now.
Or something. Like, maybe he's not actually, but they just think he is.
Or perhaps the character of the story is based on this guy. We don't know enough about him to call it for sure, but, you know, maybe we'll... I'm certain he will be back in his annoying short pants.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't shoot him more times.
Oh, yeah, but I did appreciate that.
Yeah, man, it was like all the shooting,
please.
Did
you only make the one bullet?
Get on that.
No, they didn't, because, you know,
she shot him the second time.
What is this, Symphogear? Symphogear? Y'all only made one bullet in the magic purple basement? Come on, now.
I did appreciate, however, the whole thing. It was like, he's, you know, he's cackling and, you know, kind of losing his mind a little bit, and then all of a sudden, Renfrew just shows up behind him. He's like, you talk too much. Shoots him in the back of the head. I was like, keep hitting him.
Right, like, apparently any mage in this world can be totally taken by surprise if someone walks up behind them.
And I do appreciate that. They are not omnipresent. Like, you know, Elias is, like, kind of freaky and weird, and especially with that whole shadow thing, but it's not like he knows everything that's going on all the time.
Right.
Yes, that is definitely true. So I guess in the last couple of minutes, if you guys don't have anything else that's egregiously bad, I want to answer the question I posed in the beginning, which was, do you guys feel, now take this statement with a grain of salt, do you guys feel that this show was worth the hype? Like, do you feel like it's worth being one of the most anticipated shows of 2017, and a really interesting addition to anime on the whole? For me, I'm still in the middle. As much as that doesn't help, I'm still kind of neutral. It doesn't, like, blow my mind, but I will say I'm always interested to see where it goes next, and interested to see how they play the whole thing out. I like where the characters are going now, and I hope they continue to go that way. But I will also say that the pervading, weird, creepy romance angle that they set up in the beginning, and the fact that some things, like you guys said, don't make a whole lot of sense, and we haven't really seen a ton of magic yet, although I will say episode 12 was beautiful with the staff making.
Mm.
That kind of shuffles me back to neutral. So I'm going to say maybe. I don't think if you chose to check this show out and you're with us here at episode 12, you have lost out. I think it's still a good choice, and if you haven't checked it out, I do still recommend jumping in. So I'll start with that.
I'm warming up to it. I will say that, yeah, the creepy romance angle, like, especially in the early part of the show before they start, like, actually getting into the weeds, so to speak, it did hamper it a lot, and largely because I made a connection to a conversation that, there was a entertaining, like, YouTube thing where two characters were talking about the Twilight movie back when it came out, and one of them is explaining the conceit of the whole thing to the other one as pornography for women, and, like, because of the the process.
Werewolf guy who takes his shirt off every 10 minutes?
No. Well, I mean, there isn't really that. I mean, that's not the connection, and I haven't seen Twilight. I don't know if that happens. But it's mostly the process of changing, like in Twilight's case, a jerk vampire guy who, generally eats people into someone that, loves the main character as being the equivalent of pornography, except for a different audience. And as soon as they dropped the reveal that Elias wasn't a creature that had innate emotions, I was like, oh crap, I can see the strings. And like, I've thought about that connection a lot, but they are moving, in a better direction than that. Like, they're doing more with the characters' personalities themselves, I guess. But it's, I don't know. I don't think it was a good way to start the show with that. They should have let it build up more organically.
I concur.
Yeah. I would say for me personally, I don't know if it quite lives up to the hype. Very rarely does anything actually live up to its own hype.
You of all people, the salt is needed for you.
Very true.
Don't take that phrase exactly as stated.
Absolutely. I am always suspicious of hype because, other things have been hyped up that turned out to be like really major either disappointments or just irritations to me in the past. This one, it is a legitimately good show. My personal issues with the characters aside, I find that it is it's an enjoyable world. I'm becoming more, sort of generous to it as I look back on it, and I'm definitely interested to see where it's going. Even if I'm not 100% down with whatever happens between Elias and Jisei, I am definitely interested in seeing where the world goes from here.
And as for me, like, I don't want to say that I'm a conductor on the hype train, but I was trying to sell you all tickets before the show started back at the beginning, and I'm still more or less like all in on this show, so I'm very excited for where it's going.
You were a big fan of the OVA, right?
I was a big fan of the OVA. I hadn't actually heard any of the hype, but I watched the OVA and I was like, wow, this is really good. And then they're like, oh, we're gonna make a show out of it. I was like, whoa, really?
I'll say I already knew the train existed, so when you sold me a ticket, I was like, why not?
Yeah, so I was excited.
I already know most of the ins and outs of the train, so let's do it.
There you go. So I am very positive on the show. I like where, like, basically anything for me where they take, where they can make something different in this medium, like really different and interesting, is exciting and something to be lauded and look forward to. So
very true.
I think it's a good thing that it's happening, and I'm looking forward to more of it.
Awesome. All right. So we'll do another one of these when the next half plays itself out.
If you're looking forward to something, new and different, there will be some of that, I assure you.
There's definitely some of that. Like I said, I recommend it. I think people should jump in on this one. All right, well, tune in next time when we see how it all plays out. This is a podcast by The Con Artists. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your Android podcast app of choice. For more anime and game-related content, please visit us online at theconartistsblog.com. Thanks for listening.